Excuse me. Members, I'd like to bring the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Representative Johnson, have you seen the minutes of March 3rd?
Yes, Mr. Chair, yes, I have, and I move them.
Thank you. Discussion to the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Members, one change. When we do have House File 1326, that's my bill. I thought we had pretty well worked it out with folks on some of the recycling provisions. We'll have discussion on the bill, but the bill will need to be laid over instead of moved to GovOps. Our hope is that the agency and the interest groups will get this done within short order, and the bill will be back here to be moved to GovOps shortly. But that's actually the third bill today, so we'll start on a more positive note and moving forward. Representative Fabian, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's nice to be here. I guess at this time I'd like to move House File 690 for possible inclusion and also move my 1A amendment.
Okay. Representative Fabian would like to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on the A1 amendment.
Okay. Why don't we discuss the amendment then, Representative Fabian? If we're going to have a roll call, I'd rather have folks know what they're voting on. So why don't you lay out the bill and then lay out the A1 amendment, and we'll have discussion about it.
Thank you,
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. You know, this discussion for me started actually a couple of years ago in dealing with county engineers up in northwest Minnesota. Road projects, they have to have their 404 permits from the Army Corps of Engineers. We've had a number of meetings going way back to 2011, summer of 2011, where the county's involved, the Army Corps is involved, trying to figure out a way to get these permits for road projects, rather very simple ones, speeded up. And there's a couple of states in the country where the state has actually assumed the 404 permitting responsibility. Michigan, there's some stuff in your folders, I think, from Michigan, the state of Michigan, some people there who are involved with the 404 permitting. So rather than leaping right to the full assumption of the 404 permits here in the state of Minnesota, we would actually like to do a feasibility study. I've talked with some of the different agencies that would be involved in this, and we'd like to take a look to see if this would work here in Minnesota. To the amendment, to the A1 amendment, simply on page 1, line 10, we're inserting this appropriation is available until June 30th of 2017. On page 1, also line 22, we're deleting the Board of Water and Soil Resources and including or inserting Pollution Control Agency. And then on line 1.23, we're taking out the Commissioner of Natural Resources and inserting the Builders Association. And then on the second page, we're just changing the date to 2017.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, to the A1. We'll concentrate on the A1 at this point, members. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple of the changes, the change in the date, I don't have a problem with, but the deleting the Commissioner of Natural Resources and inserting the Builders Association, you know, Mr. Chair, I've been making this point that we've been literally writing interests into the bill. Here it's not even saying somebody from industry, it's literally naming the interests that would be in the legislation rather than the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and I just don't think that's appropriate.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'd have Mr. Carlson address the concerns of Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson, if you could, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record and speak to the A1.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the regional center counties in greater Minnesota and 4 of the ring counties here in the metropolitan area. The amendment is based on our discussions with the agencies. They pointed out that both Bowser and the Department of Natural Resources are charged with conducting the study in the bill and consequently didn't need to be on the steering committee. Also, in those discussions, they suggested that we did need to have developers on the steering committee envisioned by the bill, and we had discussions with the Builders Association of Minnesota as if they would fulfill that role, and they assented to that that suggestion.
And Mr. Carlson, if I read through the bill, there's a number of other folks that are involved in this area that are spelled out. There's an AGC member, there's a member of the League of Cities, there's two members from AMC. It seems like, and we're trying to bring all the interest here, so I'm understanding what you're saying. I would like if both of the agencies that are being deleted, is Mr. Jaski or Representative Bowser here, and is Mr. Meyer from DNR or somebody else here from DNR, just to confirm what Mr. Carlson has said, that that represents the agencies are already involved, and this is to bring a more broad group. If you could identify for yourself for the record. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dave Wirens. I'm Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And I agree with the presentation by Keith Carlson regarding the proposed change of the Bowser from the steering committee as presented on the amendment. It certainly is my perspective that, I can't speak for DNR directly, but certainly from the board's perspective, being that we are charged with actually running the study, that it didn't feel entirely appropriate to be on the steering committee at the same time.
Thank you. Anybody from DNR here? Oh, yes, go ahead. Sorry, sir.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Stephen Colvin, C-O-L-V-I-N. I am Deputy Director for the Division of Ecological and Water Resources in DNR. And Department of Natural Resources finds this amendment acceptable. We do have a significant role in this process on in the legislation. We're satisfied with that role.
Okay, thank you. Good for that. And then let me ask, let's go, Representative Borenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a question either for the agencies or Mr. Carlson. I understand your point that, the agency's on the board, so therefore they don't, the agency doesn't have to have a place on the task force, but it says that the language in line 22 is it says appointed by, so there's still it's actually an appointment. It's not an assumption that the agency will sit there. And, you know, when I look at the bill itself, and we can get into that discussion later, but, I mean, it looks like the outcome is somewhat predetermined, you know, given the composition of the study group, although you have three slots for environmental groups. But can't Bowser appoint someone other than themselves? I mean, that's really what the language says. So they don't need to be on it, but they can still appoint somebody. So why would we need to do this?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ornstein, the language providing for the specific appointments to the steering committee does not dictate that it's limited to those individuals or organizations. It just identifies specifically who has to be appointed. Bowser and DNR are free to appoint additional representatives if they so choose.
Representative Hornstein.
Okay, well, then I'm still a little confused as to why we need this amendment, because, you know, they can still appoint somebody, and why not?
Representative Fabian, comment on that? No? Okay. All right. Next, I've got Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going to the amendment, I was kind of interested to see that it's spelling out, you know, the one agency, the one group, because I know elsewhere in the same bill, line 2.10, it says that Board of Water and Soil Resources could appoint three representatives from different environmental organizations, but it didn't call out the organization. So I was wondering, why were we generic there, but more specific for this part of the amendment on having the builders associations particularly cleared out instead of making it more generic along those lines?
Mr. Wierens, do you want to comment on why it says Board of Soil and Water will pick three environmental organizations instead of just letting three environmental organizations pick them?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to the point of the role of the board in appointing representatives of the environmental organizations, certainly, if it's the wish of the committee to change the language to allow each organization to appoint their own representatives, that certainly is fine from our perspective.
Okay. Representative Fischer, if you guys want to contemplate that and pick three organizations, just let us know. If you want to lay the A1 over for a minute while we talk about the bill and see if you want to do that. I mean, it's the same way if you don't want to pick Builders Association, if you got a different builders group. It's just somebody's got to appoint that, and it sounds like the agencies are fine with the change. So if you'd prefer, instead of Bowser picking the environmental groups, you want to pick them, that's, I don't know that we have a big concern. Representative Fabian, why don't we lay the A1 over for a minute and just let's talk to the bill in general. We'll assume the A1 is kind of be incorporated in some form. It sounds like we're not that far off in what we're talking about. Representative Fabian, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Hansen and Fisher and Hornstein and others who are concerned. You know, we're willing to work with you on this stuff to get the language right. This is not, you know, some nefarious thing that we're doing here. It's, you know, we want to make sure that we get a good product in the end. So that's my goal. Again, back to the bill, folks. If you've had any experience with your local county engineers and so forth where they need to get these 404 permits, there are tremendous delays involved in it. Very frustrating. You know, when you're trying to complete road projects in northwest Minnesota, our construction season is very, very short to begin with. And, you know, when it takes a couple of years to get some of these permits, it just really throws a wrench into, you know, what county officials are trying to do. So, and again, if you read through, I've got some other documentation that gets rather lengthy. If you want some more stuff from Michigan, I can give you that to kind of point out what they're doing. There are currently also a couple of other states in the nation that are looking for this. As I mentioned earlier, Michigan and New Jersey currently have the 404 assumption. They've taken on that role. There have been a couple of other states, I've been told, that are also looking at that this year in order to be able to assume the 404 permitting within their states. I believe it's Oregon and Montana. I've talked to Representative Colin Peterson about this process that we have going here. They're actually doing some things in Washington, D.C. I don't know what's going to happen. And hopefully you're going to be able to soften the landing a little bit for us when it comes to doing some of these things. So that's my motivation for doing this. I'm responding to the concerns of my constituents who are very, very frustrated with the lengthy, costly permitting process. And I'm sure that Ms. Braddock and Mr. Carlson have a lot more to offer to that as well.
Okay, questions? Representative Fabian, we're going to revert back to the A1. Any more discussion on the A1? Roll call has been requested. McNamara votes aye. Clerk will call the roll.
Clark.
No.
Cornish. Dill. Fabian.
Yes.
Fenton. Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hackbart. Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Houseman. Heintzman.
Aye.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson.
Nay.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Purcell. Hoppe.
No.
Rarick.
Aye.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglum.
Aye.
Dill.
Aye.
There being 9 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment is adopted. Representative Fabian or anybody else, discussion to Representative Fabian's bill. It's being laid over for possible inclusion. I will ask the agency to work with the environmental groups to see if they want to identify the environmental groups. And then the same way, have a discussion to be sure that the Builders Association of Minnesota is the correct one there. It's just somebody's going to be appointed from there. I know we're identifying other ones. Somebody's got to pick them, so we have to do it that way. So I get that. Seeing no other discussion, Representative Fabian, you want some final comments? I'm sorry. Ms. Bidock, were you going to testify? You're on the list, or you're
sure.
Cool?
Sure, I'm not sure. Ms. Carlson wanted to start with comments.
Every bill you and I have been on so far, you've testified against me, so if you want to speak in favor of a bill I'm going to support, I think I want you to speak.
I know I'm getting a little confused. What am I doing here?
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Sure.
My name is Abby Breidick. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. We're a membership organization, and we represent all 87 counties. And we've worked closely with MICA on this legislation. Like Representative Fabian said, this has been something that we've been looking at for several years. A few years ago, you may recall, we had a bill that would put together a permit streamlining committee to look at the business process of providing permits. And this was one of, and the committee was made up of county engineers along with the permitting agencies. This was one of the suggestions they had as something to look at for ways that we could expedite this permitting process. We've identified that this is both duplicative, and we see significant delays with the Corps. So along with some other measures that we've looked at to find out the best way we can most efficiently spend especially our transportation funds, this was something that was identified as worthy of looking into explore. Other states, Michigan in particular, has seen some great success with state assumption. They claim they get their permits in and out the door within 30 days, and really do not see delays from this portion of their permitting. So that's why we'd like to look at that. There's some, to Representative Hornstein's comment, I assure you that the results of this are not predetermined. We have some very legitimate, serious questions about whether this is the best fit for us as far as who would administrate it, perhaps the costs, what it would do to the local WACA structure. So we think it's the right time to look at this, but we really want to make sure that it is what we want. It is the direction we want to go. So I'll stand for questions, and I know Keith Carlson had some more points about how we arrived at this place, if you'd like to.
Mr. Carlson, I was reminded by our able staff that we haven't had the thorough vetting of the bill yet. I was rushing. I was thinking it was yesterday. We're fine time-wise today. If you could further explain your position on the bill and what it's about. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To start with, I do want to make this clear, although this is an initiative of the county engineers, this affects all entities, both in the private and public sector, that will be doing construction projects that are impacting wetlands. The overarching intent of this bill is to study what's long been contemplated by the state's law and is permitted currently by state law, and that's the state takeover of the Section 404 Wetlands Permitting Program, currently administered by the Corps of Engineers as overseen by the EPA. What the bill does not do is it does not change environmental standards whatsoever. Takeover won't occur without further action by the legislature, and it's not going to occur without the EPA's sign-off. That's one of the major points of this study, that we have to potentially make changes in our law and our administration in order to satisfy the EPA before 404 could take over. Right now, really, the basis of this bill is that we have an extraordinary amount of permitting that's required for construction projects that impact wetlands. It's possible right now that five separate permits would have to be taken out. A construction stormwater permit, if it's public waters and where the wetland occurs, a permit with the Department of Natural Resources, a third permit with PCA for the Section 401 program of the Clean Water Act that the PCA administers on behalf of the EPA. And then finally, really the nexus of this bill, the Section 404 permitting program under the Federal Clean Water Act, and then the Wetlands Conservation or WACA permits that are administered by local governments under the oversight of Bowser. Really, the last two permits, in our engineers' views, are largely redundant. and they've experienced significant delays, particularly because of the recent circumstances in the Corps of Engineers where they're significantly understaffed. But they also deal with complications where they're dealing with two different entities basically administering the same subject. As has been identified, New Jersey and Michigan have already done this, and it's the source of study in Oregon, Virginia, and Montana, so we're not really breaking new ground here. Has already been made obvious. We've worked with the agencies to identify improvements in the bill, and the changes that were in the A1 mentioned were in concert for that. The date change that was not spoken to, you have a preliminary fiscal note that assumes that this would be done in 1 year. With the amendment, it now delays it till 2 years, so this, depending on the outcome of the study and the legislature's desires, could be taken up in the 2017 session. And with that delay, the cost should go down because the agency can use some more of its resources rather than having to contract with outside parties. In conclusion, we think that, you know, it's high time after over 25 years that this issue is put to rest one way or another. We do not, as Ms. Bryduck said, have a preordained outcome here. It may well be that the study will be completed and it's decided that it's not appropriate or feasible, but it needs to be put to rest one way or another, and it's time to take that on.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to point out that, this is a bipartisan effort. Senator Stumpf, my senator up in District 1, is the chief author of the same bill over in the House, in the Senate. Representative Dill and Purcell have signed on to the bill, so I appreciate the support.
Okay, thank you. We have some questions, Representative Fabian. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank you, Representative Fabian. I'm also a co-author on this. And it's been advocated by a deeply respected county engineer in one of the three counties I represent. And the study makes good sense, and if we can streamline these processes appropriately, it's good for Minnesota. Thank you much.
Thank you. I have Representative Torkelson next.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Representative Fabian for bringing this forward. I think it's a very important initiative. We all know that the department or the Corps of Engineers' responsibilities are far-ranging now. They are understaffed. They've been dealing with more issues all the time, including AIS. We don't know at this time what the Waters of the U.S. Changes may turn out to be, but if we expand the definitions of Waters of the U.S., we're going to see even more of a workload on the Corps of Engineers. This is a very important step in the right direction, assuming that that the study actually verifies what we think should happen here. So I applaud Representative Fabian for bringing this forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian, any closing comments or either of the testifiers?
No, Mr. Chair. I have had some conversations with the colonel here in the state of Minnesota, Colonel Kaprowski from the Army Corps, and talked about the permitting and the problems that that they're experiencing, too. So hopefully we can get this done, and we can come up with a good product in the end. I appreciate your hearing the bill today, sir.
Well, thank you, Representative Fabian. I want to offer the public, there's a number of folks here. I'm not sure what bills they're interested in. Is anybody, if anybody from the public wants to testify, if they could go to the pages and get identified, and then I'd like them to come down after we finish questions. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out, I think, what Representative Torkelson just said seems to contradict what Mr. Carlson had said, which is he said this study will verify what we already think. So, you know, there seems to be, I still have concerns. I want to repeat my concerns about the predetermined outcome, you know, based on what I just heard. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
To that point, Representative Hornstein, I think all of us at the table as legislators have opinions on things, and often we think we know best what the outcome should be, and I guess that's the idea of the study, that we'll find out what is the best thing. So, great point. I don't see anybody coming forward, so Representative Fabian, I'm sorry, Mr. Tamman, if you'd come down. Mr. Tamman, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the committee allowing me to come down here at the last minute, but I've been listening to the debate. Bob Tamman from Sedan, Minnesota, and we've heard mention in this bill about a cost-benefit analysis And we've heard previous comments about a cost-benefit analysis on House File 616 for new rules to protect our water. And I'd like to observe that as we've watched mining progress in Minnesota, I haven't seen any requirement that we actually show that PolyMet is going to have any net benefit for the state of Minnesota. I haven't seen a cost-benefit analysis for them. We destroy Minnesota's wetlands without a cost-benefit analysis, but still we're insisting on cost-benefit analysis here. I would think it's a little bit embarrassing for the state of Minnesota to be destroying our wetlands and permitting global mining corporations without a genuine cost-benefit analysis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Tamman, and you're here on behalf of yourself and your wife.
That's true. I don't think anybody wants to claim my testimony today other than myself.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tamman. Again, welcome, and for the audience, they should know that you come down every week and observe both here and in the Senate from Sudan, which is a long ways from here, members up by Lake Vermilion. One more testifier, I think. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members, Dan Larson with the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. Just briefly, just add our support for this bill. It's a good bill. Please take it into consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Representative Fabian, you want to renew your motion? House File 690 be laid over for possible inclusion. I don't see anybody else. Thank you. Next, members, I'd like to move House File 1328. That's a bill I'm offering. If the DNR could come forward, I believe Ms. Naaman from Land Acquisition and Legal Services will talk about the bill. Members, this has to do with conservation easements and some of the OLA report that said there was some deficiencies in some of our easement management. So, Ms. Naaman, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then why don't we do that first, and then I have a small oral amendment that Ms. Taylor will speak to. Ms. Naaman, welcome.
Thank you. Susan Damon from the DNR Land Acquisition and Legal Services Manager in the Division of Lands and Minerals.
Thank you. Why don't you just tell us a little bit what the bill is before Ms. Taylor speaks to the amendment. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a bill that would create accounts that would enable the DNR and Bowser to fund the long-term stewardship of their new conservation easements at the time of acquisition. The earnings on the accounts would generate sufficient funds to provide a stable source of funding going forward. These appropriations would be used for conservation easement stewardship activities, which would include working with the landowners, monitoring the easements to detect any concerns before they become serious, and if necessary, enforcing the easements. The accounts would also enable us to transfer funds that have been previously appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to both Bowser and DNR. Neither of the agencies currently has the ability to earn sufficient interest on those appropriations to provide a sustainable source of funding. And so approximately $1.04 million in funds that have been previously appropriated to DNR for conservation easement stewardship, and $1.38 million in funds that have previously been appropriated to Bowser for conservation easement stewardship would be transferred to these new accounts.
Thank you, Ms. Damon. Why don't we have Ms. Taylor explain the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment would be on line 2.2, delete contracts and insert contacts, and then again on line 3.11, delete contracts and insert contacts. And I believe this is just a typo, so we're providing funding for landowner contacts and not contracts.
Okay, thank you. Everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The oil amendment is adopted. Ms. Damon, why don't you walk through this a little bit more? What will the money, how will it be invested? What's the anticipation? What will DNR actually do with this money differently than what's happening today? Are you the right one to explain that?
Yes. Well, the money would be invested by the State Board of Investment, and the Board of Investment would be required to manage the account to maximize long-term gain. And the funds that would be generated then would be used for DNR and Bowser's conservation easement stewardship activities. These concern a variety of activities, maintaining good relationships with the landowners, and that requires ongoing contacts, regular monitoring of the easements, regular monitoring has two purposes. One is to prevent violations of the easement terms from occurring by communicating with the landowners, and also if there are any concerns or potential violations, we would be able to detect those. And then there are a number of other issues, such as landowner requests for approval under some terms of the conservation easements. If necessary, this would also provide funding for enforcement. The funds currently, this would apply to new easements going forward, and would apply to the easements that were funded in conjunction with the previous appropriations to DNR and Bowser for conservation easement stewardship that would be transferred into this account.
So, Ms. Neiman, did I understand that all conservation easements that DNR is responsible for monitoring now would fall under this? Is that basically what you just said?
Well, currently we have about 1,020 current conservation easements, and some of these we would use other sources of funding to perform our stewardship activities. But as we acquire new easements, we would seek a contribution to this fund, and then this fund would be used to pay for the stewardship activities for those easements going forward.
And Ms. Neiman, how would you determine how much you solicit? Is there a percentage of the cost of the easement, or is it acreage, or how would you determine what's appropriate? Ms. Neiman.
Mr. Chair, members, there are a number of factors written into the bill in Section 1, Subdivision 3. We would have some flexibility to adjust that as needed because conditions could change, earnings could be different, but we would have to take a number of factors into account in determining that, including the estimated annual staff hours needed to manage the conservation easement, travel expenses, information technology support, and there would also be an annualized cost of legal services. For example, there may be an estimate that there would be a violation of an easement once every perhaps 50 or 100 years, and then we would try to annualize that cost to make the determination of how much the principal amount should be going into the account.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, I know the testifier has talked about both DNR and Bowser easements, and maybe I'm just missing it, but I don't see Bowser explicitly named. It talks about easements held by the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and maybe it's in there. If you could point out where that is.
Ms. Damon?
Section 2 of the bill addresses Board of Water and Soil Resources talks about the board and deposits into the account and appropriations to the board. And then Section 3 pertaining to the transfer, Section B also pertains to transfer of funds that have been appropriated to the board.
Representative Hansen, additional follow-up. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I see in Section 2 the State Board of Investment has the creation of an account, deposits in the account with a wetland fee. Maybe I'm just missing the definition where Board of Water and Soil is referenced. And the purpose for this, Mr. Chair, is I know when we had rim easements that were combined with wetland
reserve easements, it's a little bit challenging, and so I want to make sure we're correct on our references.
Ms. Damon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, this is in Chapter 103B. Section 2 would create a new subsection in Chapter 103, which pertains to Bowser.
Great.
Representative Hansen, on the record. Thank you for getting that on the record, Ms. Damon. I think that's important. Ms. Damon, can I ask you a little bit about, you talked about the fund will be set up, and I'd imagine if somebody is going to be going out and checking on enforcement or reacting to complaints or maybe just doing strategic going out and looking around, what division of DNR or who in Bowser would actually do that? Who would actually be going out and checking on these? And do you do that not only by site visit, but would you use Google Maps or something to look and see if buildings or encroachment or farming has been happening? Ms. Damon.
Mr. Chair, the monitoring of the easements is typically done by the divisions that administer the easements. So, for example, trout stream easements would be monitored by Fish and Wildlife staff. SNA or prairie bank easements would be monitored by ecological and water resources staff. And forestry easements would be monitored by forestry staff. We do use some remote sensing tools. In fact, we currently have a project that is an Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund project in which we're testing some GIS tools to enable us to detect buildings on the site. We also generate maps and look at those maps to see if there are building encroachments.
Would that include, Ms. Damon, looking for, like, clear cutting or something, or farming, actually, where farming's not allowed, or different practices? You mentioned buildings specifically. It seems like you could also use that for other encroachments.
Mr. Chair, yes, it would. We can identify tillage where there's supposed to be none, and cutting of trees through GIS and other remote sensing tools. In terms of Bowser, there is a representative from Bowser here, Bill Penning, and maybe he could talk about who monitors their easements.
Why don't we bring him down and have him speak to that, and then we can also get on the record that they understand they're included in the bill. Welcome, Mr. Penning. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Bill Penning, Conservation Easement Section Manager with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. To answer the question on who does monitoring for Bowser, we actually contract with the local soil and water conservation districts and have them do the monitoring for us. They tend to know all of the landowners in their work areas personally and have good relationships with them, and we find that that works very well for us. If we find a minor infraction, usually the SWCDs are able to talk to the landowner and get the problem fixed. If they can't, it gets elevated up through the board.
Thank you, Mr. Penning. Could you also put on the record that you agree that you're part of this by the section number identified, that you're part of this easement program?
That's correct. The statute 103B is the Bowser enabling statute, and this definitely applies to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, specifically the RIM program, as well as the Wetland Banking program, and we were involved in this, supported.
I see no other questions anywhere. Members, I'd like to lay over House File 1328 for inclusion in omnibus bill. Thank you both for coming forward. Ms. Damon, thank you for your testimony. Next, members, I would like to move House File 1326. It's an MPCA policy bill. MPCA is going to come forward, Assistant Commissioner Kadalka. Members, this may take a little bit longer. We do need to have a thorough vetting, Commissioner Kadalka, and including having the landfill garbage folks come down and talk about their concerns so that we can get this figured out so we can get the bill moving. Welcome, Commissioner Kadalka. If you could identify yourself for the record and Why don't you walk through the whole bill probably to start, if that would work. Thank you. Did I move the bill for possible inclusion? Thank you. Go ahead,
Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Dalka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. If it's okay, Chair, there's a handout in the document that is our fact sheet. It goes through it in order of sections and lists by topic areas, and if it's okay, I'd like to just go through that order. So the first piece deals with Section 1 of the bill, and it is about increasing the recycled content of publicly purchased paper. The goal here is to help ensure local markets for recycled materials, and what it proposes to do is changing just for copy paper purchases for public entities, move it from a 10% recycled paper content to a 30% recycled paper content. Our understanding is there's only one paper mill in Minnesota using recycled content paper, and it is 30%, and we are working with others just to confirm that, and they use local feedstock of wet laugh recycled content feedstock from New Page out of Duluth. So this would help our goals have a strong recycling market. You need strong local markets. The next item deals with Section 2, 3, and 17 of the bill, and this deals with septic professionals and simplifying the regulatory system. So right now, between a building and a septic system, there's a pipe, and in between it's referred to as the building sewer. And that building sewer right now is part of the plumbing code. As a result, septic professionals, which are the folks that usually work on this pipe, this connection, when it's just dealing with a house that's already been built and they're changing out a system or installing a new one, needs to go through the Department of Labor and Industry and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency for licensing. What this proposal does is it codifies that as a co-definition of being in the septic and plumbing code, allowing septic professionals to be able to work on that piece of pipe with just the MPCA license through the septic licensure. It also makes some changes so that the requirements that someone needs to get for bonding for the plumbing code would be in the septic bond, so that what it does for the septic professional is reduces the amount of applications and certifications they need to do. They're just dealing with the MPCA, and it's a reduction of effort for them. We have worked with a number of parties on this for a number of years to try to get this right, the delicate balance, including the Minnesota On-Site Wastewater Association, which is septic professionals, Minnesota Mechanical Contractors, and the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. The third item is Sections 4 through 8, 11, 16, and 18, and this was meant for a technical change. Last year in the supplemental budget bill, a change was made to 115A.511, where the definition of recycled, the words for reuse in their original form was taken out. So the different definition for recycling was different in this one spot. And what we propose to do in these sections is make it similar throughout the rest of the bill, the same definition of recycling. As a result, we've learned this morning there may be some other unintended consequences, talking to the waste haulers and others, including the counties. We don't believe they're insurmountable things that can't be worked out. We're going to work together with all parties to come to a definition of reuse, since it's being pulled out of recyclable, definition of recycling, so that it still matches what the legislature did last year, but also works in the operation of what's being done throughout the whole system. The fourth item is Section 9 and 10, and deals with the reporting of mixed municipal solid waste and recyclable materials. The legislature a while back worked with the counties and also solid waste administrators and others to help streamline the reporting system that's done in terms of solid waste and recyclable materials. One of the things during those discussions that was discovered is that we could have better information if it was reported directly from waste haulers and get a more complete picture and accurate picture of what was being done. Since that time, we've been working with the waste and recycling haulers on this, and the amendment that's in the packet, the A3, is a start of getting towards that goal, where there would be, instead of a hauler reporting to all the counties that they need to, that they have their service territory in. They will report to the state information either on a long or short form so that they don't have 87 different types of forms. And then the information would be made available to everyone, including counties and local units of government, to help get more accurate data and streamline the system for the counties and the waste haulers. We are going to have to make a few small changes to it, but the concepts are there, and we just need to tweak the language. The second to last item is Section 12 of the bill, and it makes vapor mitigation systems eligible for the Harmful Substance Compensation Program. Vapor systems are used to deal with soil vapors, which we're seeing a lot more of, from various chemicals that work up through polluted and contaminated groundwater through the soils in the basements of homes. Right now, currently the system works so that if a homeowner, and we've done this in Waste Lake Township, Bayport and Baytown area of Washington County, where they have a drinking well that's contaminated, they can hire someone on their own to put in the drinking water treatment system that's needed, that's being required by the Department of Health and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and then turn over those invoices to the state to pay. The other way it would be done is that the state would set up a large contract for this work and then go out and cover it through that way. This provides another option, in some ways a quicker option, for folks to get the protection they needed. All we're doing is asking for vapor mitigation systems to be treated in the same manner that we're treating drinking water systems. And the advent, because of the increased need for these being put into various locations across the state. There is a restriction that the reimbursement cannot be more than $25,000. The last item is sections 13 through 15, and this deals with the drinking water treatment facilities and their eligibility for a grant, point source implementation grant. The point source implementation grant is used for wastewater and stormwater facilities, where if they are required to do certain things because of a RAP, a watershed restoration and protection strategy, or TMDL, which are both studies dealing with the watershed and the amount of pollutants coming in and ways to make sure we protect or restore a waterway. If one of those entities need to make changes, they're eligible for up to 50% of the cost, up to $3 million. What we've run into in two situations, which include Pipestone Lincoln Rural Water, along with the city of Morris, is that they have on their drinking water treatment systems on the back end where the wastewater comes out, so the garbage that's cleaned out is can't be discharged in the waters because of its toxicity, is the salty discharges. The one way to fix that is you pay on the back end to clean it up, and then that could be eligible for the grant. However, we're finding that it may be make more sense to change the water treatment system on the front end to reduce the amount of pollutant that comes out of the back end. It's cheaper and provides many additional benefits. However, that fix, that solution, is not eligible for the grants. This change here makes that change eligible for the grants, so we get the environmental protection that we need in a way that makes sense. We're trying to problem solve for the best type of solution. Mr. Chair, with that, I would stand for any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Kadelka. Let's see. Why don't we take questions right now to what you've testified so far, and then I know the garbage folks want to weigh in on the discussion you already mentioned. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, on page 9 of the bill, where you've got the reasonable cost to install the mitigating system and so forth, I'm curious, a couple of questions. Number one, on line 9.4, it talks about the maximum of $25,000. Do you have any data for us how much money has been spent by the state in this program in the past? And if you said that, I apologize if I missed that.
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I don't have the total amount. I can get that to you. There's between 5 or 10 of these systems right now for drinking water systems that I've seen come across in the last year. It really pops up with if we're at a site and determine that there needs to be a need, and that's the West Lakeland and the Bayport Baytown Superfund sites are the ones that have been driving the need recently. But we will get you an updated numbers.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then in the next paragraph, 9.5 through 9.9, there's another $25,000. Do you have any kind of a fiscal note or a cost estimate as to how much money you would be spending in that program?
Commissioner Cadell.
Per year?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's a good question. Right now, if one of these systems need to go in, and the folks that are eligible for these systems would go first to a responsible party to cover that cost, and that would be taken care of in that manner. When this program is used, it's when there is not a viable party. So today, what happens is the state does the contracting for the system and puts it in. The change would allow for the homeowner to do the contracting and pay. Either way, under the law or the proposed change, the state still has to pay for the air mitigation system going in. What we're actually changing is just the mechanism of how it gets put in, whether it's the homeowner signing up the contractor to do it, or we put in an RFP, put a contract out for the site, and have them do it. So either way, it's the same amount of money to the state because the state's on the hook because there's no viable party.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious to know, if this does happen to a homeowner, what is the actual cost? I mean, how much do they actually spend on one of these systems? I mean, we're talking about $25,000 here. Is there a number that you have a total cost for kind of an average system to do this?
Commissioner Kudelka, do you want to have somebody else help you with it?
Yep.
Want a friend.
If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and did you hear Representative Fabian's question?
Yes, my name is Gary Krieger. I'm a supervisor in the MPCA's remediation program. And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fabian, Representative Fabian, the cost of these vapor systems, my understanding is around that $1,500 to under $3,000 per house. So again, it probably wouldn't really come close to that $25,000 limit. And as Commissioner Kudelka said, either we would be putting it in or the homeowner would be installing it and then getting reimbursed.
Mr. Krieger, if I can weigh in, Representative Fabian, thank you for the flexibility. I'm thinking of this relative like to a radon system that some of us have had to put in our homes, and I'm thinking specifically my son did it in his home in Hastings, and I remember he got a couple of bids, and they were quite wide-ranging. They were in the numbers you talked about, but some of the bids were 200% of the other bids. Do we have a requirement? The homeowner can then... You're saying it's between $1,500 and $2,500, but they can spend up to $25,000. What if they get one bid and it's for $6,000 and the system's already put in? Does this legislation allow for reimbursement under that case, or is there a requirement they get a couple of bids, and is there a list of who they solicit to, or how does that work?
Representative McNamara, my understanding is that the Minnesota Department of Health, as you said, would have kind of like certified or special, you know, listed contractors for these radon systems or mitigation systems. And we would want to look at, again, the design of the system. We would want documentation as to the system. Is it what would meet our requirements, or basically it would be the system that we would have installed? So we would look at the equivalency of the system that was installed and compare those costs to what we would have, the state would have paid through one of our contracts.
I'm going to go back to you, Representative Fabian, then I may have more questions. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to either one of the gentlemen, I have probably one of the best insurance agents in the world. I won't say his name, but he is on Center Street in Roseau. I'm wondering, does my insurance cover any of this? Again, and
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we don't believe it would. It would be because of actions of someone else that had contaminated or polluted a site, and those fall on the state at this point to cover those cleanup actions when there isn't a viable party.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then in kind of circling back to the numbers that were thrown out here a little bit ago, the $1,500 to the $3,000, why are we making the number here on line 9.9 $25,000?
Mr. Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, what we did is try to just duplicate what was done for the drinking water treatment systems above it. There are cases where there may need to be more work. Mm-hmm. If a basement does not have a concrete basement and it is a dirt floor, part of the system is going to need to seal that in addition, because the concrete floor provides a level of protection and the system provides and creates a vacuum underneath it. Without the concrete floor or one that has large chunks in it, sometimes work may be needed to upgrade the concrete floor to a home. So the cost may be a little bit more than what just the system, which we just quoted the averages, are.
Commissioner Kudelka, Mr. Krieger, I'm going to ask that you guys do some more work on this section, specifically to put some parameters around the ability to get reimbursed. Now, when you just mentioned what you did, Assistant Commissioner Kudelka, I'm thinking of a reconstruction project I was involved in recently where the home did not have a concrete floor. It had a crawl space basement, and originally the thought was, well, they needed to put a concrete floor even though they don't go down in the crawl space, and they was determined that no, you can put a some kind of a poly vapor barrier down there, and it serves those needs also. I think we should have some parameters around what we're doing consistent with what the responsibility. I like the idea of the homeowner being able to do it instead of just the agency, but if we could have some side rails on some of that so that there's some guidelines for them in how the homeowner moves forward. And it seems like logical that at least we would, if they don't have to pay for it, I would incentivize them to get a couple of quotes, it seems like. And we have some standard practices in state business currently that I think you could follow. And truthfully, if we don't have that under the drinking water, why don't we get that to apply to them too? I think that would be good. I've got a couple more questions. Representative Hackbarth, and then Representative Torpe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Kudelka, Section 2 and Section 17, could you explain that again to me? I think we went over that kind of fast. I don't know what the ramifications are or the result of doing this would be, and why are we doing it?
Sure. Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I apologize for going over that too quickly. So the building sewer is that pipe between the home and a septic system, which is the plumbing code. And so the problem that we run up against is a septic professional that wants to work on that, whether it's install, design, or other work on it, needs to go to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to have a license to deal with the septic system that's hooked up to it, and go to the Department of Labor and Industry and get a pipe laying card and register with them for the working on that building sewer, the pipe between the septic system and the home. In both cases, you need a bond that would be able to cover the what's required under the plumbing code and the septic code. So right now, there's two applications, and we have done some work to try to make one bond eligible for both requirements, but there's more steps in there which a professional needs to go through than I think we believe is necessary. The change here would be to change in sections 2 and 3 to codifying building sewers as part of the septic code. Now, with that change and changes in the application with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's septic professional applications, what we do is just check to see if they have their pipe layer card to still meet the plumbing code requirements and have all that done in one application. They then don't have to get the application through the Department of Labor and Industry and save those dollars. And what we're trying to do also is make sure it matches up with the plumbing code bonding requirements. So you see on section 3, line 4.26, the change there in the bond dollar amount. And then what you mentioned, Representative, section 17, the rulemaking, we need to also amend rules to make those matches uniform throughout the septic code. The end result is a septic professional goes to one agency, one less license, and gets one bond, and doesn't have to worry about that, am I making sure I'm hitting both agencies' requirements? So we're trying to simplify this for the septic professional.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so it sounds like you're making it easier for the installers and the designers and those folks. Is there any additional training that's going to be required of the installers, or do they all already have this?
Or fee charge?
Mr. Chair and committee members, there should be no additional requirements. They're having to do both codes right now. What we're trying to do is just have them just work with one agency instead of multiple. They will no longer have to go through Department of Labor and Industry and pay that registration fee. So there is a savings to them.
Additional follow-up, Representative Hackbarth?
I'm good.
Okay. Is there anybody in the industry that wants to speak to this specific issue? Anybody here? as it was my understanding, we're streamlining this. This work is historically done by the septic people. My experience is once you're outside the building, the plumber is not, they don't want to get deep in the trench. They don't like being in the dirt, and so they stick the pipe out, and I want to make sure that we're making this easier for the septic guys, not trapping them into some plumbing pool. So it's our understanding that that's making it better. Next, I have Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, I'd like to go back to the vapor barrier or the vapor intrusion issue for a moment. Is there a list somewhere of what vapors we're dealing with in this program?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we can get you a list. Soil vapor is usually a result of volatile organic compounds that set it off. So some examples include petroleum products, also TCE trichloroethylene, which used to be a degreaser used in industrial locations, PERC, which is a dry cleaning chemical. These are all examples of chemicals that once in the groundwater tend to work their way back up through the soil as vapors and present this problem. Those are the type of chemicals there are, but there's a longer list of compounds that fall under that category.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kadelka, is there a kind of standardized way we test for these? Are there certain levels of concentration that are designated to be a problem? Can you identify that a little better?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we work with the Department of Health. They've set various standards and screening values for us to use, and that's what we use in the field for petroleum. TCE and PERC are the three big ones that we come across most often.
Representative Torkelson.
And finally, thank you, Mr. Chair. How widespread are these vapor intrusion issues? Have we seen them all over the state or mainly in certain concentrated areas?
Commissioner Cadell.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is an issue all over the state. We are learning more about soil vapors. The science behind soil vapors is relatively new in the last five or plus years, and so part of the governor's budget includes more dollars to do investigation on active and closed sites, because what we had done is traditionally look at the groundwater, make sure that's safe for someone to drink and it's not getting to a surface water or contaminating anyone else, and then close the site. Now we know the soil vapors are there, and so we're having to go back and look at these sites. So there's a lot more to be work to be done, investigations, and we will have more sites. The list is growing.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one question, Representative Torkelson, that you're almost there, and my question is exactly along that line. How many of these potential sites, soil vapor sites, are in Minnesota? We must have an idea on that. If you don't have it, can you get it to us, please?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do have some numbers on sites that are contaminated with the VOCs. Not all of those have soil vapors, but that would be kind of a high-end range we could give someone, and we can get back to the committee on that.
Representative Purcell.
Yeah, just some kind of a sideboard. You were kind of getting to that about costs, I think, Mr. Chair, and that's what I'm looking at, because this is relatively new science, and more and more sites are being, folks are being impacted by this statewide.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, what's the certification process for this? So when a homeowner has a claim, how is it, the paperwork and so forth? What are the levels that are required to meet the bill?
Mr. Chair and committee members,
Commissioner Kadelka,
I need a little bit of help here. It is a short application, but I'll have my colleague described a little bit more who deals with it every day.
Mr. Krieger, if you could, you don't need to identify yourself. Go ahead and answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was an application process that we have now in place for homeowners to submit an application with their, location, the reason for their claim. As Commissioner Kadelka said, most of these are drinking water treatment systems or resident for cost of hooking up to like a city service. Would submit an application form. The invoice is documentation as to the costs. It's a process to review if those costs are reasonable. The commissioner ultimately would recommend approval of the costs. The applicant would acknowledge that that's an acceptable reimbursement, and then they would be issued a payment for their claim.
Mr. Krieger, do you have a list of contractors that do this kind of work, if there's a certification required for the kind of work they're doing, or if there's not a certification, do you have a list of contractors you maintain, or how do the people go find somebody? They just go in the Yellow Pages, or what do they do? Mr. Krieger.
Chairman, is that for vapor mitigation systems?
I'm actually interested in if you could also do it for the vapor and for the drinking water. I'm wondering how it all works, how they do that. I know people do that and understand, but I'm concerned about their ability just to go out and get one and not worry about the cost necessarily. Or do you help them find somebody so they don't get somebody unscrupulous and we end up reimbursing them for that and the system doesn't even work?
We can help them find that. Like with drinking water systems, it's a service like a Culligan service that installs carbon treatment systems that they can go to. Vapor mitigation systems, I believe the health department has certification. There's a health. Yeah, or we can get back to
you. Okay, if you could get back to us on those, I think I'd like to get the side rails as we're all talking about how it's done, the process, and that we have a good system to help homeowners, but yet maybe help them make sure they're being responsible. But at the same point, I don't want to pick one winner over somebody else. In other words, just one person, because maybe they got a big ad in the Yellow Pages. That's where we direct them to, and then they get an opportunity to nick them a little harder. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm still curious to know what is the test for verifying this? I mean, I know there's an application you fill out, but what is the scientific test that is done to determine, intrusion?
Mr. Krueger.
During the investigation process, our consultant environmental firms would install like a sub-slab. They can test the vapor below the slab of the home. They would put in like a small port into the basement and be able to take out an air sample below the basement floor. Then they can measure the vapors in that airspace below the house. And then we would look at that compared to screening values or values for like intrusion of certain chemicals as far as what those concentrations are, and compare those to like health-based values and determine if a home mitigation system is needed.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we heard earlier about the cost to mitigate this. What's the cost to the agency to perform this and go through, and how do you plan to absorb those costs in the agency? You have more FTEs to do this? Walk me through this, Assistant Commissioner Kudelka.
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, as we're going through sites and working on them now, this is one of the battery of things that we look at. So we'll take water samples. If there's a plume that we discover new, we'll look at soil vapors and the like. We have started through the agency working on active sites that have done the investigation that may have occurred before we became well aware of what this is and have an understanding of how to escort and to mitigate against it. So we are going back to various sites. Part of it has been a redistribution of dollars within the agency to be able to spend more time going back through active and closed sites. But the governor's change item also has an increase in funding to help with this that was approved by the legislature and the governor last year. And the governor's change item we're asking to is to keep that funding level through and built into the base, because we are seeing more of these. And that's how we would have the staff to do the work.
Representative Fabian.
And just as a reminder, Assistant Commissioner Kudelka, what is that funding request?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I do not have the number in front of me, but I've got it in my bag, and I can bring it to you at the end of the committee.
Okay. Well, you'll have some time to get that when garbage folks come down, so then you'll be able to give us that testimony. There's a couple, at least one more question. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a little clarification for Representative Fabian, and correct me if I'm wrong, but measuring VOCs is a pretty simple process. We used to do it all the time in my former life, and relatively inexpensive gas chromatograph, good analytical lab, and things what you're speaking about, and the sampling. Really, for the homeowner, I don't think it would be a very big expense as far as that goes, but the technology is there, has been around for a long time, and relatively easy to apply.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This question, I guess, is for the CA. I'm just wondering, and maybe the author, when he comes back, this bill doesn't deal with the solid waste sludge issue. Is there a bill that PCA is bringing forward that does, or is there room in this bill for that kind of discussion, or am I missing some part of this that might apply?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you are correct that the bill does not have anything dealing with the sludge applications. There are requirements and regulations through the agency already to deal with that situation. If there's something else that that you believe needs done, we can talk about that, but it is not in this bill, anything.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
So I guess
I would ask if the agency is open to that discussion. If this should be the bill, I should deal with it within, and if that would be your preference or separate legislation.
Commissioner Kudelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, are more than willing to have a conversation on it. I'm not sure what you're proposing. We would need to look at it and double-check before agreeing to anything.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not asking for a stamp of approval for what I haven't said yet. I just want to know if there's a way. I guess I need to work with the agency on that and the chairman, the author of the bill. Maybe it would be something that could come separately. I'm just concerned about, and I've raised this in this committee before, some of the sludge that, there's the chairman, that is deposited on some of our farmland. I'm just concerned about what we know and don't know about what's in that sludge. And so I was asking, Mr. Chairman, whether or not this is a bill where a vehicle that I might use as a vehicle for that question, but I haven't had a chance to really talk with you about it, and I'll wait. I'm not prepared today to do anything, but I do want to raise that as an issue. And if you think this is a good bill to put it in, we should have a conversation. If you want me to do it separately, that's fine, too. I won't do it today anyway, but...
Well, Representative Clark, thank you for that, and it'll be coming back. It's being laid over. It's got a little bit of work to do on the one section, but certainly when it comes back, we'll entertain your concerns. To that point, Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. When we're looking at these vapors, the intrusions, VOCs, and things in basement areas and all of that, is the contractor that's making the field observations and things contracting with an independent analytical lab? And obviously, different VOCs are treated differently in terms of limits and things. How is that determined? And professional labs are involved, I'm assuming.
Mr. Kruger.
Chairman and Representative, for like sites we investigate, we have environmental consulting firms that do the investigation for us. They oversee the work that's done, the testing that's done, and then they do utilize like MDH certified labs by the Minnesota Department of Health that do the particular vapor testing. So we do use MDH certified labs in that testing, and we require any parties that responsible parties that do the investigation to also use certified labs. So we're confident in the data that's collected.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think next, Mr. Carnival, are you doing it for the entire industry, or what's the plan? Mr. Carnival, if you come forward and remind us what section, who you represent, what sections you're testifying about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival. I'm a Grand State Carnival Law Firm representing the National Waste and Recycling Association. You can call us the garbage folks. That's what we also the recycling folks today. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on this bill. I'm happy to hear that the bill will be laid over, giving us an opportunity to visit with the MPCA to work out some of the concerns we have with it and some of the questions that we have. We are concerned about sections 4 to 11 of the bill dealing with recycling and reporting requirements. First, although we've worked with the MPCA for over 3 years on reporting requirements, and there's language in section 10, subdivision 3, the language doesn't have any provision in there that would indicate that the agency would work with the waste hauling industry to do the reporting requirements, and to indicate the intent of that language, which was to try and reduce duplication and streamline the reporting. So we're eager to work with that section and try and come up with some language that works. Now, perhaps more importantly, there's a couple of key sections of the bill related to recycling, and these provisions we had not had an opportunity to work with the PCA on, and frankly saw them for the first time yesterday. These sections relate to the definition of recycling, to take out the word reuse, and Mr. Kudelka at one point discussed that. Again, we're eager to discuss this with the agency, recognizing that this provision may have some implications that perhaps the agency hadn't thought about, and we want to make sure that we're on the same page and that they make sense. There are currently some materials that are being reused that count toward the definition of recycling, and under the new definition, they would no longer be counted. So we're concerned about that for three reasons. Number one, the state's recycling rate may drop if this provision takes place, if we understand it correctly. Secondly, the outlook for recycling commodities in the coming year is not very good. Prices for these commodities are projected to go down, and we may have to shift to reuse opportunities for some of these materials. So in that case, the counting of them is very important for the recycling goals and to meet those things. And thirdly, if reuse is not included in the definition of recycling, we may trigger some taxation provisions with respect to the 80-15 provisions. If 85-15 provisions, where if 85% of materials going through a recycling facility are not actually recycled, then taxation occurs, even though the materials ultimately may be reused and beneficially used. So we're eager to discuss these matters with the PCA and see if we understand the implications and figure out whether they make any sense or not, and happy to come back and discuss this with the committee if we can.
Mr. Carnival, a couple of things. I just wanted to clarify. The bill itself was posted on Monday. The amendment was I want to be sure that everybody in the audience knows. So you've seen the bill since Monday. It was the amendment that got posted yesterday.
Correct. The bill was posted Monday, and it's Wednesday. So we just had a chance to take a look at some of the new provisions in the actual bill, maybe Monday afternoon.
And, Mr. Carnival, to the 85%, I want to give a plug to my own local hauler. I just had a discussion with him a couple days ago as we're discussing recycling, and he told me he's at about 97% of when he lays it out on, he calls it the kitchen floor, 97% of what is in recycling actually gets recycled, and I was surprised to see that so high. So I really would not want to hear that some folks are having trouble hitting 85 with something. Now, that would mean that there's some unintended consequences right in the bill, which you're pointing to. Commissioner Kudelka, do you want to speak to their concerns so that we get this ironed out? We're laying over a lot of bills, members, for possible inclusion, and it's not my intention to revisit this entirely. So I would like, if there's issues no different than yesterday, Commissioner Kudelka, you got a lot of work before you on Representative Fabian's bills from yesterday to work it out with interest groups. So I'm assuming you'd like to put some simple ones like this to bed. Commissioner Kudelka, to the industry's concerns.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we had a small huddle up right before the committee here and have committed to keep working with this. It is not our intent to have unintended consequences. The goal of this was to create uniformity through the statute by having all the recycling definitions being the same. And so we are more than happy to work with the parties on this.
And Mr. Carnival, I see other industry folks in the room, and you're all on board with what Mr. Kudelka, is there anybody nodding, or if there's anybody that's not on board with Mr. Carnival?
I can represent, Mr. Chair, that those folks are in the conversation that Mr. Kudelka represented, and they're eager to work through this language and see if there's a way we can agree.
And I don't see any of them wanting to come down and dispute what the two of you are saying. Any more discussion on this bill? Not seeing any members, I will lay over. We did not do the A3 because the commissioner said it needs a little more work, and it sounds like this bill will get figured out so that you can spend more time on the difficult ones like yesterday that we all want you to work real hard on. So I hope you'll bring back, seeing how you're getting done 23 minutes early, you can go back to Commissioner Stein and tell him that we can go to work with folks on Fabian's bills from yesterday so they become non-controversial and everybody's got kumbaya around here because we got a lot of work to do. Members, we're adjourned till tomorrow. Or, yeah, we're adjourned. Thank you. Yeah.